Good afternoon, and welcome to the McClatchy First Quarter 2018 Earnings Conference Call. All participants will be in listen-only mode. Should you need assistance, please signal a conference specialist by pressing the star key followed by zero. After today's presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. To ask a question, you may press star then one on your telephone keypad. To withdraw your question, please press star then two. Please note this event is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to Stephanie Zarate. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Austin, and thank you all for joining us today for our first quarter 2018 earnings call. I'm Stephanie Zarate, Investor Relations Manager, and I'll be available to answer any follow-up questions you may have after our call this morning. My phone number is 916-321-1931, and you can also find my contact information on our website. This call is being webcast at McClatchy.com and will be archived for future reference. Our earnings release was issued this morning before the market opened, and I hope you've had a chance to review it. Joining me today is Craig Forman, our President and CEO, our Vice President of Operations, Mark Zeman, and our Vice President and CFO, Elaine Linticum. This conference call will contain forward-looking statements that are subject to risks and uncertainties that are described in our SEC filings. Actual results may differ materially from those described during the call. Also, non-GAAP amounts discussed this morning are reconciled to the most directly comparable GAAP measures in our schedules posted on our website or in the body of our press release. Now, I'll turn the call over to Craig Forman.
Thank you, Stephanie. Good morning, and thank you for joining us today. The quarter just ended is an important one for McClatchy and underscores the transformation of our company. We sometimes say more has changed in the past 2 years at McClatchy than in the previous 159, and the first quarter of 2018 illustrates this. Let me start with our digital progress. We achieved an important milestone in the quarter just ended. Digital advertising revenue exceeded print newspaper advertising revenue for the first time. In our view, this digital crossover is accelerating compared with our trajectory in previous years. This is a significant achievement for several reasons. First, it underscores how far we have come as a company. Revenues, excluding print newspaper advertising, accounted for just over four of every $5 of revenues in Q1. Of course, that is also a reflection of the continuing headwinds in the traditional print side of the newspaper business, which is, unfortunately, not news. Another proof point in our digital transformation is in digital subscriptions. Our digital-only subscriber growth at 33% year over year takes us firmly beyond the important 100,000 subscriber level. We ended the first quarter at 112,200 digital-only subscribers, and we expect to continue at this pace of growth or better for the rest of 2018. We anticipate further acceleration in digital subscriptions with a new initiative we launched this week with Google. McClatchy is the first launch partner in Subscribe with Google, a tool that makes it easy to subscribe online to our 30 news titles and showcases our content in search to subscribers. Creating a frictionless way to subscribe to our valuable local news content has the potential to be a game changer for us. While this initiative launched after the first quarter, we are optimistic that it will accelerate digital subscriptions moving forward. Many factors influence the pace and cadence of our digital-only subscription success. This includes the use of data and analytics that provide insights into our subscribers, the content they seek, the devices they use to consume our content, and when, during the day, they engage with it. Our project to build this insight and have a more powerful view of the customer is well underway, led by our engineering and development team in Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. This single view of our customers will enable us to better understand them and deliver an increasingly sophisticated personalized experience based on their interests and desires. This capacity, coupled with our digital subscriber platform, more sophisticated sales tools, and a strong marketing function, will open new avenues for advertising and audience revenues. Another factor contributing to our digital-only revenue growth is on the audience and engagement side of our business. In the quarter, monthly unique visitors grew 13% to 78 million, and our video views grew to just over 137 million, more than double the views from the same quarter of last year. We are also seeing increased page views per story of nearly 50% year-over-year. These metrics of increased engagement are evidence that our Newsroom Reinvention initiative is succeeding in producing content that matters. Our commitment to producing such independent journalism in the public interest continues to attract awards. In the quarter, two of our newsrooms were Pulitzer Prize finalists: the Kansas City Star's Why So Secret Kansas series on the lack of government transparency in the state of Kansas, and the Miami Herald series Fight Club that exposed abuse in the Florida juvenile justice system. In fact, as a company that is dedicated to independent journalism in the public interest for more than 160 years, we are proud that at the end of the first quarter, 30% of our full-time employees are in editorial positions, up from 27% in 2012. And we are fortunate to be working in this industry at a time when there is growing awareness that local journalism is vital to communities and society, and the role it plays in strengthening our democracy. To leverage this awareness, this quarter, we announced we'll begin using the hashtag ReadLocal on our social media platforms across the enterprise to highlight the importance of local independent journalism to our communities and tie the McClatchy brand closer to its purpose. Nonetheless, we are clear-eyed as ever about the challenges on the traditional side of our business, and we continue to manage costs against the rate of decline of our print business. For the first quarter, we reported an adjusted net loss of $20.3 million and adjusted EBITDA of $17.4 million. I'll take this time to remind you that the first quarter in an advertising-driven business is cyclically the worst quarter when it comes to results, margin analysis, and the like. While these results are far from ideal, we exceeded our internal expectations, and as a result, still have confidence in the outlook that we provided a few months ago. One more word on the print newspaper world. We are often asked on these calls about the impact of newsprint prices on our operating model. As the print side of our business has declined, so has our operating sensitivity to fluctuations in newsprint supply and pricing, now less than 4% of our operating expense, down from 20% at the peak of print newspaper revenues more than a decade ago. Nonetheless, policies such as the newsprint tariffs announced by the administration earlier this year are unhelpful, we believe, both to free markets and to public policy. We oppose them, and we have made our position clear to the administration. We say this as an equity owner of one of the few remaining U.S. domestic newsprint producers, so one might assume we would be on the other side of this issue. But we are not. Public policy that makes these input prices more costly at a time of great stress in this industry harms our local communities and is against the public interest. I also mentioned progress on our capital structure. Elaine will speak more about this in a moment, but let me highlight that this was a quarter where we delevered our balance sheet by nearly an incremental $100 million, another tremendous step forward in our strategy to rationalize our capital structure. Importantly, and this is news today, we also achieved a big milestone with our binding intent to refinance our overall capital structure with assistance from an important investor. We believe the agreement, which is subject to a successful refinancing of our 2022 notes, is a win-win for bond investors and equity investors by providing roughly $50 million in incremental investment to further reduce first lien debt. Now, before I steal all her thunder, I'll turn the call over to Elaine to discuss our capital markets activity and our financial results for the quarter.
Thanks, Craig. I don't know how much thunder I have, but I would like to discuss our agreement for new extended maturity debt before diving into our earnings. We announced that yesterday we entered into an agreement providing for approximately $418.5 million in two loans that are subordinated to our first lien debt. Expected proceeds will be used to repay a majority of the company's unsecured debentures due in 27 and 29 and to reduce the company's 9% bonds due in 2022 by just under $50 million, given the premium price on those bonds. The loans are expected to be issued at a new LLC that would be wholly owned by the McClatchy Company. The debt exchange portion of the loans will be based on fair value of the bonds at the time of exchange. that does not change the principal amount of debt owed by McClatchy. It simply means that the new loans may be issued at a premium or a discount, but the principal amount of debt will be based upon the principal amount of the 27 and 29 debentures being repaid. As Craig mentioned, the transaction is contingent upon the satisfaction of certain conditions, including the refinancing of the remainder of the company's 9% first lien bonds due in 2022. We expect our interest payments to remain quite reasonable. We've issued the new money second lien debt at a discount to keep our annual costs low. The blended interest rate of 7.172% on both loans, including the new money debt, compares well to the 6.938% blended rate on the unsecured debt due in 27 and 29 that is being repaid. And the second lien debt tenor is extended to 12 years, while the Tranche B debt tenor is 13 years. The new money portion of the loan adds approximately $12.5 million in debt because of the OID, but it has a nominal impact on our overall leverage ratio and is, we believe, very fairly priced. So we're quite pleased with the results should we be able to complete this transaction. We're looking forward to the opportunity to refinance our debt, allowing us to continue to focus on quickening the pace and cadence of our digital transformation. We expect our first lien investors to see this as a great opportunity as well. And if not, we'll stay the course, focus on our strategies, and look to refinance at a later date. After all, there's a lot of runway between today and December 22 when our first lien debt matures. And now for a financial summary of the quarter. As we've already mentioned, we reported an adjusted loss of $20.3 million. Our adjusted EBITDA of $17.4 million was a decline of about 24.5% compared to the same quarter last year, but only a 1.7% impact on our overall margin. We do not expect to see the level of declines to be the new normal. Similar to last year, we expect to see improvement in trends as we move throughout 2018. Let me also add that our tax provision, which I'm sure looks odd to an investor reading our income statement, includes an additional adjustment to a deferred tax asset reserve. Our GAAP results reflect a non-cash charge to increase a tax valuation reserve on deferred tax assets that were created in the quarter. That charge of $14.3 million is equal to $1.85 per share. Prior to recording that charge, we had a $6.4 million tax benefit on the company's underlying quarterly results. Total revenues were down 10.1% compared to the same period a year ago. Revenues exclusive of print advertising accounted for about 80% of total revenues in the quarter, an increase from the same period last year as we become less reliant on print advertising. Advertising revenues in the fourth quarter were down 16.7% in total. The decline is largely due to lower print advertising, which mainly is attributable to the continued headwinds we face in preprint and retail environment, and our switch to a digital-only provider for digital employment advertising, Recruitology, that we will cycle over in the third quarter of 2018. A few points of the print decline was the result of a change in accounting classification for obituary revenue, but that money just shifts the digital revenue category and it has no impact on our total advertising revenues. Direct marketing declined 21.9%, and this category was negatively impacted by retail environment, the shuttering of some less profitable products, and the residual impact of a slow return of tourism in the Caribbean. I'd also point out that this category was down only in the low single digits last year, so we were facing some pretty tough comps in the first quarter of this year. Audience revenues decreased 5.6% in the quarter, but we continue to see strong growth in digital-only revenues, as Mark will discuss momentarily. We continue to act on our cost control measures in order to mitigate the declines in print advertising revenues. Our adjusted operating expenses were down 8.4%. This rate of decline is an acceleration from 2017, and it reflects the efficiencies we continue to find in our operations. And we're not done yet. We outsourced our printing operations in Biloxi, now leaving us with only 9 printing hubs across our 30 media companies. And we continue to find more areas of regionalization and centralization to provide support to our markets as effectively as possible. We are asked every quarter how much more costs do we believe we can remove from the business, or put another way, can we really continue to see cost savings? I think we've proven that as print declines, we continue to find ways to save on the related legacy expenses. We're also always looking at the way we run our business, and as we become a more digital company, we are building the organizational structure one would expect for such a digital company. Now let me turn the call over to Mark to provide an update on our advertising and audience revenue results and strategies.
Thanks, Elaine, and hello, everyone. In the first quarter, our total digital advertising represented 43% of our total advertising revenues, up almost 10 points from the same quarter a year earlier. As Craig mentioned, last quarter we reached the crossover point that we had alluded to at the end of last year, where our total digital advertising revenue now exceeds all of the ad revenue contained in our print newspapers. Obviously, our primary revenue goal is a return to growth, but this digital inflection point is an important milestone along the way. It's really a combination of three factors: the continued decline in print revenue, our consistent growth in digital-only revenue, and the ongoing shift in our internal book of business from print to digital. As reader habits and advertiser options change, we constantly monitor our allocation methodologies to make sure we're accurately reflecting how our ads are being consumed. Obituaries are just the latest category in that. Employment revenue became mostly digital beginning in 2009. Auto revenue followed suit in 2012. National retail ROP revenue moved from mostly print to mostly digital in 2016. And real estate revenue made the switch in Q4 of last year. Traditionally, obviously, obituaries were mostly a print category for us, but today we receive most of our readership and revenue on the digital side through our partnership with Legacy.com. So we thought we'd start reflecting that as we started a new fiscal year in 2018. To be clear, the change is only meant to allocate the sources of our revenue more accurately. It has no effect on the total advertising number. With the updated OBITS reclassification, our digital-only revenue increased 21.6% versus Q1 a year ago. Without it, we still would have posted solid growth in the high single digits. And importantly, even without the reclass, we still would have reached a digital crossover point in the first half of 2018. The digital advertising world continues to face rapid change, but no matter how we internally account for the revenue, our strategies remain the same, namely to focus our sales efforts on the fastest growing areas of our business and to continue to restructure our sales departments to improve staff training, increase our time in front of our advertising customers, and focus on the KPIs that deliver the best results for these clients. Regarding the latter, we began regionalizing our sales teams in January, starting in the Midwest, and plan to launch the West and Carolinas in Q2 and the East in Q3. Our goal is to put a tight fence around our legacy business while also increasing the pace of digital advertising growth. But we also expect to see significant cost savings through better efficiencies. Meanwhile, once again, we saw strong revenue growth in the first quarter from our national category, our Accelerate Digital Agency, and video and web services. Digital advertising now represents three-quarters of our total national revenue and continues to grow strongly, up more than 23% from a year ago, more than offsetting the print national decline. In fact, our 10% growth in total national revenue for Q1 was our best result in that category in at least the last 10 years. Two-thirds of our national digital revenue comes from programmatic, which was up 28% in the quarter over 2017. Our programmatic results were generated by increases in both rate and volumes, with the latter aided by a 15% growth in page views in the quarter. We also continue to see a growing audience in video. Our video views in the first quarter were more than 137 million, already close to 40% of what we reported for all of last year. As a result, our video revenue was up almost 50% in Q1, and we believe there's much more opportunity ahead for us as we continue to rapidly innovate in this area. For example, in Q1, we launched on Facebook Watch our second season of Titletown, Texas, the story of the Texas Wesleyan football team, a series that generated 23 million video views on Facebook last year. Another driver of our digital revenue growth in Q1 was Accelerate, our digital agency offering custom solutions to larger advertisers. Accelerate revenue is up more than 160% versus a year ago, and we're now seeing a consistent stream of six- and seven-figure deals. As a reminder, more than half of these advertisers are new to us, and more than half of that revenue is new as well. Turning to audience, we saw another quarter of record growth. Our digital subscribers reached 112,200 in Q1, as Craig mentioned, up nearly 33% compared to the same time last year. We expect that growth rate to continue and possibly even improve as we move through the year. Craig talked about our Subscribe with Google initiative, but we're also continuing to add other subscription options such as day passes. We're doing more to entice print readers to activate their digital accounts as well, including adding more virtual pages of news, sports, and business stats into our digital e-edition, in effect tripling the size of the daily print newspaper online. And we continue to move closer to rolling out an enterprise-wide data and technology upgrade so that we can deliver a better digital experience to our readers and advertisers. Digital-only audience revenues associated with digital subscriptions grew 16.6% in the first quarter, and total digital audience revenues were up 2.6% versus the same period last year, reflecting a drop in our print and digital combo home delivery subscribers. That drop led to our overall 5.6 decline in audience revenues in the quarter compared to the first quarter of 2017. Now let me turn it back to Elaine to complete the review of our first quarter results.
Thanks, Mark. As Craig alluded earlier, in the first quarter, we reduced our senior secured notes by $95 million, reducing the total secured notes to $345 million, less than half of our debt due, which now stands at $710 million at the end of the quarter. We also lowered our interest expense related to debt by $2.8 million compared to the first quarter of 2017. In the first quarter, we completed two small building sales for gross proceeds of $3.9 million. And just a few days ago, we closed on the sale and leaseback of our Columbia, South Carolina property for net tax proceeds of approximately $13 million. And we've offered these proceeds to our 22 bondholders at par, that offering still continuing. As of the end of the first quarter, our leverage ratio was 4.42 times cash flow as defined in our credit agreement. Our first lien ratio was 2.13 times and will be lower if we complete the deal to refinance a majority of our unsecured debt and use new second lien debt to pay down the 22 bonds by approximately $50 million. We have an unused $65 million revolving credit facility, and the restricted payments basket under our 2022 bond indenture was approximately $790 million at the end of the quarter. Our capital expenditures were $2.1 million in the quarter. And now I'll turn the call over to Craig to discuss our outlook and take your questions.
Thank you, Elaine. We at McClatchy are laser-focused on digital investments, including data that will allow us to know our customers better, provide products that delight them, and bend the revenue curve in the right direction over time. We've already demonstrated, through the first quarter results, that we've reached the crossover point for total digital advertising revenues and are nearing the quarter in which our digital-only advertising revenues exceed revenues from print newspaper advertising. Again, while this digital-only crossover point reflects our expectation of continued declines in print advertising, we also expect to continue to post strong digital revenue growth throughout the year as we increase our digital product offerings and opportunities. It is our focus on new subscriber and advertising products and the go-to-market strategies that will be the headline of our digital transformation story throughout the rest of the year. We continue our focus on quality journalism and efficiency as our regional structure improves and focuses our coverage in the local communities where our brands remain renowned and across the country where our McClatchy journalism increasingly is synonymous with local relevance and national importance. This will, in turn, drive both our audience reach and engagement as our technology efforts remove friction and make it easier for readers to become digital subscribers. We believe our growth in digital-only subscribers will continue at the same or even faster pace than we achieved in the first quarter, and that growth in digital subscribers is expected to largely offset continuing declines in print circulation, resulting in low single-digit revenue decline. We plan to continue reducing operating expenses and will monitor costs for the remainder of the year to achieve expense performance in line with revenue performance, despite the additional investments we are making in news and sales infrastructures. Proceeds from real estate sales will be used along with cash from operations to delever the company through debt reductions and to further invest in the business. At McClatchy, our journalists, our web developers, our engineers, our press operators, our salespeople, and all of our nearly 4,000-person one team have a lot to be proud of. Let me highlight that we are proud as well of our record in delevering our balance sheet. We have paid back billions of dollars in debt while generating strong operating cash flows and still consistently providing award-winning news coverage essential to the success of our communities and our way of life. This balance sheet improvement and delevering, begun by my predecessors, strongly supported by our board of directors, including me, has accelerated in the year and a quarter since I became CEO. The new financing arrangement we are telling you about today will provide greater operating flexibility and would extend our runway to pursue and succeed at the digital transformation so important to us and to our future, and to the future of the local communities we serve, and to the Democratic Republic we cherish. And with that, we are happy to take your questions.
And at this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then one on your telephone keypad. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the keys. To withdraw your question, please press star, then two. And our first question will come from Avi Steiner with J.P. Morgan. Please go ahead.
Thank you. I've got a bunch of questions here, and I'm going to start balance sheet if I can and then come back to the business. Craig, I hope you're okay with that. Number one, how much of the existing unsecured notes will you be buying or exchanging with this one investor, and how much will be left outstanding post-exchange, if anything?
Avi, thanks for the question. I'm going to just allow on the call folks to steer the questions on the balance sheet to Elaine. So, Elaine, please.
Sure. Avi, if we're successful in completing this deal, which as we continue to emphasize, and I've been reminded by my attorneys to continue to emphasize that it is dependent upon certain conditions, including the refinancing of the 2022 bonds, we would be leaving about $6.3 million of the 2027 debentures outstanding and leaving about $2 million of the 2029 debentures outstanding. So this would substantially refinance all of the unsecured debt.
Okay, I may come back to that. Thank you. And what entity will the new, I think you mentioned at the beginning of the call, but it was very quick, but what entity will this new debt be issued out of? And I assume the debt that is being, the nines that are being refinanced will be issued out of the same entity. Is that correct?
Well, we have we will be discussing our strategies for the refinancing, but it is likely it would be the same entity, and it would likely be a new LLC that would be wholly owned by the McClatchy Company, so it would be a wholly owned subsidiary. Again, more work will be done on much of this as we work with our tax advisors and our capital markets advisors, but that is our expectation today, that it would be a wholly owned new subsidiary and that the new debt would also be refinanced at that same level.
Okay, so that's the new LLC you mentioned at the beginning of the call. And is it too early to know how that will benefit from security guarantees, et cetera? Is that too early on your end?
There'll be a lot more information provided in 8-Ks coming, but I'm not comfortable in talking about information that we haven't already put out regarding the transaction. So there'll be more information as we file the agreement in a subsequent 8-K.
Okay, last question on this, and then I'm going to go to the operations, and I appreciate it. Did I hear correctly that the transaction would increase your interest expense? I had run some numbers, and maybe I came to the wrong conclusion. I'll make sure I heard you say that. And then is your assumption in that statement, if I heard it correctly, also incorporate a refinancing of the nines?
That the refinancing of the nines is a bigger deal, but let me just back up and walk you through it. We are issuing $50 million of new debt associated with this, so new money debt, and that new money debt is factored into my explanation. So I think that if I factor in the refinancing of the 2022 notes with that debt, we think it would increase interest expense about $1 million pre-tax.
Okay. I'm going to turn over, I'm sure others will have questions, but I'm going to turn over to the operations if I can real quickly. I know the first quarter is small for the year. Moves can be magnified. You both mentioned it's not a trend. But the ad spending was I guess, much – the decline was much higher than I was looking for. And I'm curious if there are any one-time items. And at one point towards the end, I heard a mention about Recruitology. But if you could walk me through the impact there, it would be great.
Avi, could you repeat that first part of that question? We got lost a little bit there.
I tend to blather. I apologize. The ad spend decline this quarter was much higher than I had expected. I know it's a small quarter and not a trend, but it was still elevated, and I'm trying to figure out, beside the usual factors of what drove it, was there any other items? And I heard Recruitology mentioned at one point as being a factor, and I'm trying to understand that as well.
So the biggest factor related to the print side of the business, and it came in two areas, print newspaper advertising declines that are in the print newspaper, but also we mentioned a fairly significant decline in direct marketing. And that direct marketing decline, I think, coupled with the print decline in the newspaper advertising, reflected that. Recruitology is simply a bucket shift where some of our employment advertising that originally was with CareerBuilder, as you know, was reported as print advertising, and that now is coming through Recruitology, which is all digital only. So I was only explaining a bucket switch there.
Right.
So, Mark, do you have something more to add?
No, I would just sort of give a little bit more detail on that. I mean, retail results were disappointing. Obviously, that's something that we've been seeing for some time now. Total retail revenues finished a bit better, actually, in Q1 than Q4, but that was driven entirely by digital growth. Revenue from preprints delivered with the newspaper actually got worse. And as Elaine said, our direct marketing circulars delivered it to non-subscribers also softened. So our retail customers are facing some tough sledding. It continues to have an impact on our print products. And some of those advertisers, obviously, in direct marketing are the same as the ones that are in the print newspaper, and their troubles affect both. In retail, print revenue, our largest declines were coming from the food and drug and department store category, and we've seen that trend for a while. Preprints took a steeper decline in Q1 than we've seen in previous quarters, down about 38% over last year. Again, though, due to continued losses from the major department stores like Macy's, Sears, Steinmart, Penney's, and stores no longer in business that were rolling over from last year like H.H. Gregg and Toys R Us, or at least going in bankruptcy, Toys R Us is still struggling. So, and preprints are about 12% of total advertising revenue, so when that gets hit at that kind of percentage, it takes the whole category down. So, mostly, I think a story on the retail side, Avi, and continuing pressure on the print part of that business.
Avi, I guess I would also point out that, it was a tough fourth quarter, but we did see a little bit of pickup in December, and it's typical after Christmas advertising, as you know, that January is cyclically slower, but could have been slower because of the pickup that we saw in December, and so retailers will tend to regroup after the Christmas holiday season, and that regrouping can be more intense in this retail environment.
Great. And last one for me, and I appreciate it again. Can I get a little more context around the mix between print and digital subs? You give digital sub numbers, and they're up sequentially, up nicely year over year, and audience dollars are down 6%. So clearly, print subs are coming down off quicker. And I'm trying to understand, is there a pricing difference for those products? Just trying to understand how to think about that.
Yeah, Avi, let me try to set the context, and then Mark will continue with a bit more of the detailed color. So remember, the growth here, and as we've been talking about for some time, are on the digital-only side of the house. In many cases, the digital-only side of the house is not churn or transformation of previous subs who took the print paper or the print and digital combo, which is also very important. But in many respects, this is a go-to-market for net new subs, and that's why a growth rate of the kind of growth rate we're seeing is encouraging. Our print customers can also get access to a more and more extensive digital experience, and this is hard to describe because you can only get this and we're working on platform enhancements that may make it possible to solely subscribe to this, but right now you can't. But basically, online, we can deliver a facsimile version of the print newspaper daily that is the printed paper we would love to be printing and distributing if that world still existed. On a daily basis, this extra edition, which we've talked about in some earlier calls, but which is a really extraordinary news product, can run more than 100 pages of content and advertising, and has been a very strong, attractive experience for a lot of our print customers as they begin to become digital customers as well. So I really appreciate the question because there is some complexity in it, but the growth that we want to highlight is the growth in the digital-only subscribers, which is sort of net new to the business. And against that backdrop, let me throw it over to Mark for some additional color.
Yeah, no, again, that's right, and a little bit of color on that. You know, we've been experiencing high single-digit, low double-digit declines on our print product for quite some time now, and that's what's driving down the whole category on the audience revenue. You know, digital audience revenues are up 2.6%, digital-only audience revenues associated with our digital subscriptions, as Craig was talking about, were up 17%, close to 17% for the same period. But overall, our print subscribers continue to decline, just as our print advertiser revenue continues to decline, and that sort of drops down the whole category. And you know, that's why we're putting so much focus on digital-only audience growth to overcome those trends over time.
The last thing we'll say about this, Avi, is that, and I know, given your experience and you know, your sort of global view, you understand this more than many other people do. It is curious that the United States is seeing some of this performance on the print newspaper side more than other OECD countries. And that's something that's curious. If you look at the relative continuing strength of the traditional print newspaper, the daily print newspaper in OECD Europe, in OECD Asia, Japan, it's sort of strange that in the United States this trend line is accelerated. And, you know, maybe it's because of, and, you know, maybe I'm an example of this, the strength of digital distribution, often labeled as the internet, but we now know it's coming across through lots of different things other than a web page, including mobile products, apps, and the like, has, you know, really begun here and has grown here. But it is an interesting phenomenon that in other OECD developed countries with the same sort of GNP levels and overall standard of living, similar lifestyle, the print newspaper remains more of a daily habit than it does in the United States. And I just point that out as sort of a curious phenomenon here in the U.S.
I appreciate all the answers. I'll head back in queue. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Michael Kupinski with Noble Capital. Please go ahead.
Thank you, and thanks for taking the questions. I just want to go back to this, the digital revenue growth for a second. And obviously, you had a nice acceleration from the fourth quarter, but I was wondering, you mentioned about the reclassification of Recruitology, and I was wondering if how much of that was related to that reclassification?
Yeah, I can take that. There's a couple of questions in there. I think the biggest impact on our digital-only revenue in terms of reclass was not Recruitology. It was really the obituary shift that we started recording in Q1. You know, in the past, when we looked at that revenue, it was flowing mostly into the print newspaper revenue bucket because that's how it has been done traditionally. But as we looked at it over time, most of the revenue now from those products and most of the readership is really coming from our legacy.com partnership and the digital world. And so we started to recognize it that way, and we've moved that money over into digital only. And so over the course of the entire year, it's about an $11 million move from print into digital. Again, total revenues remain unchanged, but it has the effect of suppressing, increasing the decline on print revenue and increasing the growth in digital only. So it's about a five point change on the print side in terms of making that number, you know, for, I think we're looking at something like 31% decline in Q1. It would have been sort of like 27% or so without that change. And as I said earlier, if you looked through the reclass for digital only, we'd be up in the high single digits versus the 21% or so that we reported.
Gotcha. And so the you would probably say then that the biggest variance in the classifieds was probably the obituaries, because the classified was obviously very strong in digital.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. And in the past, you provided a dollar value for the real estate sales. Where are you in the process at this point in achieving the number you provided last year?
Well, in terms of the number that we provided last year, which we were looking to hit about $100 million, and we instead hit close to $90 million, we've surpassed that if you count the Columbia. So the Columbia sale has $13 million in after-tax, about $16 million, a little over $16 million in gross. And so that was a timing difference, but we've exceeded the $100 million from last year. Now that we have completed that sale, the largest remaining asset that hasn't yet been sold is the Kansas City Pavilion, and we haven't given an update on that, but we will as we go forward. These transactions take time, as you know. McClatchy has been very focused. I am very focused on monetizing assets that are no longer strategically important to McClatchy in terms of the need to own real estate as we become a much more digital company. So that asset sale could significantly increase the proceeds from asset sales if it's concluded later this year. We also have several other properties that are smaller than that, but that are on the market and are under contract, and some of those we think will also be closing this year. We have not given a projection of those proceeds because we think completing Kansas City, which is the largest one, is a more important and a bigger piece of that, and we don't want to negotiate that in a public conference call. So as we get closer and as we are getting to the point that we have something to announce on that, we'll be putting it out publicly. It'll be great news for us, but just know that I'm very focused on it.
Gotcha. And then in terms of newsprint, what was the pricing up in the last quarter? And if you can give me some thoughts about what it's looking like into the second quarter.
Well, the pricing actually was slightly down, about 1.1% in the quarter. We do expect that it will go up as a result of the tariffs. And so therefore increases in pricing coming from those mills in Canada. And of course, that has also allowed some of the mills here in the U.S. to take advantage of the pricing environment, and many of them are. So we expect that the price will go up. However, what I would say about that is the work that we have done to continue to try to move our print readers over to become digital readers of our e-edition for those who like the organization of a newspaper is part of the reason why you're seeing some declines in print. But as our print readership declines, as print advertising has left the paper, we use less newsprint, so much more of our information and news and advertising is digital. And if that happens, newsprint usage declines. And that, we believe, will more than offset these increases in prices. And so we still expect to see newsprint expense decline as we move into the second quarter.
Gotcha. What is the magnitude of the price increases, though, in the second quarter?
Not something that we have settled on. We're continuing to negotiate with all of those folks, and so I would say that they're going up, but we're not disclosing that on a public call because we're still negotiating it.
Okay, just two quick questions here. The digital unique growth was pretty impressive. Was there a particular issue or event that caused the spike, or do you think that this is a fairly consistent opportunity for the company to continue to grow the uniques at that rate going forward?
Well, Mike, it's a good question. We look at it all the time. Obviously, you know, at getting up to 78 million monthly active users is a big number, positions us very well at the top of the so-called league tables of national local publishers digitally, and that's great, and it's real progress. We have had a lot of news events, but we always have a lot of news events, and so I don't think we can point to any particular event that drove that. There was no extraordinary event that drove it. I would like to highlight, though, that we sometimes talk on these calls, but we do them infrequently enough. We've been mentioning our newsroom reinvention efforts, and I just want to pay a special focus and highlight that work that's going on all across the country and the structuring there of under our leader in the news department, Tim Grieve, four fantastic regional editors, three of whom are women, who are driving extraordinary change and progress in the way that we cover local news and information in those regions. And so it's really a different way of thinking about using our collective power in the Carolinas, all across the Eastern Seaboard, in the center of the country, and out here in the West, that's allowing us actually to invest in certain areas, like a regional investigations team. And I think you'll see more and more of that as we apply sort of digital savvy and digital news gathering and production and presentation strategy to the way that we engage with our users. And so I think if we look at it as a proof point, we're as encouraged by the total number of uniques going up, the reach, as we are in the engagement, which is, you know, page views per budget dollar spent in the newsroom.
Gotcha. And how much of the weakness in print retail was due to store closings? Is there a way to, for you to quantify that, or is it just retail in general is just that bad?
Well, it's not good.
Yeah, it's not good. No, I mean, we could probably try to do a spreadsheet on that. I can tell you that, you know, collectively our top 60 or so advertisers from last year were down about 30% in Q1. And although we had some improvements for some of those accounts, especially in sort of the home improvement and telecom categories, you know, again, going back to the retailers that are struggling, Macy's, JCPenney, Sears, Steinmark, Kmart, they all continue to close stores, and there's an impact to that, obviously, on the retail business for us. But I don't think we've broken out specifically what store closings across the country mean in terms of the percentage of that revenue.
But Mike, I'd just like to pick up on two points that Mark mentioned, and it's a very good question. You know, we sometimes talk about the importance of our role in local communities and with our neighbors, and these are the places we live. Our employees are our residents all across the country. The impact on local retail across the country has been, as you know, very widespread. This is an earnings call about a news and information company, so it's the wrong place to talk about those underlying trends. But I would say we're super aware of them. We obviously bear the impact from an advertising perspective, but it's also having a big impact on our communities. And, you know, that's something that we're extremely aware of as, in many cases, the leading local news and information company in those communities.
Gotcha. Okay, thank you. That's all I have.
Thanks, Mike.
And again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then one. And our next question comes from Jeff Menapace with FTN Financial. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, guys. Elaine, quick question on the transaction that's announced. I always thought the debentures were pretty attractive debt for you, relatively modest coupons, high-grade covenants, a lot of years left to maturity. Can you talk about the benefits of refining that debt now? You mentioned that the interest cost, your interest cost is modestly increasing with the transaction.
Sure. For a very nominal amount of interest change, we are able to achieve $50 million in new cash infusion that I can use to repay 2022 debt and extend the maturity. So the great news about this is that while it gives the investor the advantage of moving up in the capital structure, it does not change the other underlying covenants around that debt. And so The interest rate related to that portion of the debt remains unchanged. In addition, it still has the attractive features that are incumbent in the investment grade indenture. What we get is an extension in term and an investment of new money to be able to refinance our 2022s and thereby refinance the whole debt structure. So it was a trade that made a lot of sense to us because it did not take away a lot of the advantages that you've just enumerated, but does allow us to gain maturity in terms of runway, and also allows us to get new money to be able to reduce our first lien debt to below 2x, which we think is very helpful for our first lien investors and very helpful as we look to refinance that debt and also extend maturity.
Okay. Thank you very much. That's all I have.
Yeah. Thanks for asking. That was very good of you.
And this concludes our question and answer session as well as today's conference. We thank you for attending today's presentation, and you may disconnect your lines at this time. Have a great day.